Today, more than two-thirds of all eligible Americans have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, according to a recent report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Rewind back even a few months, and this percentage was much lower as doses were still in short supply. Illinois resident Lisa Rossi was one of those who got her first shot in late March, but unfortunately, before she could receive her second vaccine, she came down with COVID-19.
I didn't really realize how sick I was, but the morning of Easter on April 4th, my husband called the paramedics, and I barely have any recollection of what happened. I kind of remember them walking me out of the house and putting me on a stretcher and putting me in the ambulance and taking me to the hospital. And I don't remember anything after that until I woke up in the ICU unit.
Rossi was in the intensive care unit for 2 weeks. She slowly improved and was transferred to a standard hospital room where she stayed for another 11 days. Even today, Rossi is still struggling with the after effects of her battle with COVID. She only recently got off of supplemental oxygen and is still working to rebuild muscle and regain energy. And in addition to the long and hard road to recovery, Rossi, like many Americans, was left to worry about how all this treatment would be paid for. Fortunately, her medical insurance covered much of the cost of her lengthy hospitalization. In fact, she had just received her benefits through her new job only 10 days before getting sick.
What they billed the insurance company was $136,000. When I see what the insurance company paid of that $136,000 is only $51,000, and the rest of it got written off.
In the end, Rossi had good medical insurance coverage and ended up paying $2,300 out of pocket for her hospital stay, a small sum when compared to the initial number on her bill.
So, I mean, $2,300 feels like a lot, but when you start looking at these numbers, how does anybody afford this? Even when I was in the hospital, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, how much is this going to cost?
If you don't have insurance or don't have good coverage and what you need treated isn't covered, then what do? How do you pay several thousands of dollars in medical bills? Marshall Allen is an investigative journalist at the nonprofit media outlet ProPublica and says it's not just him worrying about the sky-high cost of health care.
For the past 15 years, I've been doing deep dive stories about the quality and cost of health care in the United States. And every year, Americans say that the cost of health care is their number one financial concern. And I've received dozens, well, hundreds of emails and phone calls over the years from patients who have been burdened by unfair medical bills and high health care costs. And the system is not designed in a way to actually help them or empower them or even solve their problems.
Allen is the author of the book Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win. He says each year, healthcare premiums and out-of-pocket prices continue to rise with no end in sight.
You can pay between 2 to 10 times more than you should be paying for, say, a knee replacement or an MRI or a CT scan, just depending on where you go for that particular service. So you might pay one price if you're a Medicare patient. Let's say you're going to pay $500 for an MRI. They might charge a working American on a commercial health insurance plan $5,000 for the exact same thing. There's no rhyme or reason to this. It's a lot of profiteering in the industry. It's a lot of deals that get made behind closed doors. It's a lot of markups by all these middlemen who insert themselves between the doctors and the patients. And so these costs are not actually justified.
But if people need immediate treatment, what other option is there but to receive the care? Is it fair for Americans to have to worry about the price tag while fighting to survive? Allen says there are several things you can do to help lower what you owe. The first is to look up the cost per service that the hospital is charging. This can include variable prices for drugs, x-rays, surgeries, and a number of other items.
Maybe one of the most effective things that has come into play recently is the hospital price transparency rule that went into effect at the beginning of this year. So now every hospital in America is required to post on its website all the prices for all the different services they provide. They're required to post the cash price for each service and the negotiated rate they have with every single insurance plan that they pay. And so now you can go, like, let's say you're getting an MRI at a hospital. You can see what the cash price is, what the Medicare price is, and what your insurance plan paid, whether it's United or Blue Cross or Aetna. It's now required by hospitals to post that information. And what it's revealing is completely astonishing and unjustified. What you're seeing is that someone covered by one health insurance plan might be paying three times more than someone covered by another plan, or five times more than someone who'd be covered by Medicare. You're even seeing cases where the insurance negotiated rates are much, much higher than the cash rates that people would pay if they didn't have insurance.
Ellen notes that this new federal law gets rid of the secrecy surrounding medical pricing, which can often be an extremely frustrating process to navigate. This comparison sheet shows the sliding charge scale per treatment. And with this knowledge, people can push back on their inflated hospital bills.
Hospitals have been the worst violators of this, and they even admit it. You know, if you ask a hospital administrator, why is it that I, as a working American, have to pay 2 to 10 times more with my insurance plan than, say, a Medicare patient would pay? Because Medicare always has the best prices because they're negotiated by the federal government. They're actually set by the federal government. And so working Americans are paying 2 to 10 times more than Medicare patients. To me, that's just nothing more than discrimination against working Americans. I mean, there's no reason that I should pay more for a knee replacement than my mom pays for a knee replacement when it's the same knee replacement, same component, same doctor, same operating room time. In fact, my case would probably be easier because I'm younger than my mom is, right? But she's covered by Medicare, so her price would be a lot lower. The medical system has gotten away with this by saying, well, Medicare doesn't pay us enough, and so we make everyone else pay more. First of all, I don't believe that Medicare doesn't pay them enough. There's not actually research that shows that. That's just their claim. But second, I don't really care, you know, if Medicare doesn't pay you enough. Why should I be the one to foot the bill for you making up costs from somewhere else?
So the next time you get a medical bill, don't pay it outright. Ask for an itemized version that breaks down the cost of each charge.
I'm not saying don't pay your bills, right? I mean, of course, if the bill is fair and accurate, you should definitely pay it. But I am saying never pay the first bill until you have gotten an itemized medical bill that includes the billing codes so you can look up and make sure that those prices that you are charged are fair. I want to refer people to another source called fairhealthconsumer.org. This is another website that gives you the average price that insurance companies in your community are paying for different medical services. So if you have a description and a billing code of what you need, let's say you're going to go get a procedure and you want to try and get a price estimate up front of what's a fair price, you can get that billing code from your doctor's billing department, and you can look it up on fairhealthconsumer.org, and you can kind of see the average that insurance companies are paying in your community. And at least then you can get a ballpark of whether you are going to be overcharged or not, or how this might work out for your health plan. And then also, if it's after the fact, you can check the bill and make sure that it's fair.
At the end of the day, this shouldn't be the way business is done. Fighting for fair prices shouldn't fall on the shoulders of the patient. But unfortunately, this is the reality of the current American healthcare system. Ellen argues that the hierarchy of players in the medical sector has overburdened the industry and led to price gouging.
What you see is that the big players in the system, the hospitals, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical giants, they're actually working together to extract as much money as they can from working Americans as possible. So our paychecks, our healthcare premiums, our out-of-pocket costs are going up and up and up. We're losing more and more money every year. And as I've investigated this, I've found that a lot of these high costs are not actually justified. There's a tremendous amount of wasteful healthcare spending. They estimate that maybe as much as 25% of all healthcare spending is wasted. We have been waiting for our elected officials and regulators to come to our rescue now for decades, and they haven't done it. One of the reasons might be that the healthcare industry funds our elected officials to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year to put them in office. And so their loyalty may be more to the industry. The loyalty of our elected officials may be more to the industry than it is to the public. I think that's definitely a factor.
Many experts, including Allen, have deemed the American healthcare sector to be broken. A confusing system and ever-rising prices are a constant source of worry for millions of Americans seeking care or thinking about getting help. However, there are resources out there to help those in need. Look at the charges on the bill, get an itemized version, and call the hospital's financial assistance department to negotiate your rates. Allen says in some cases the bill can be slashed in half or even reduced completely based on a person's income bracket. To find out more about this topic, our guests Marshall Allen and Lisa Rossi, as well as get more info about patient resources, visit viewpointsradio.org. Also check out Allen's new book, Never Pay the First Bill and Other Ways to Fight the Healthcare System and Win, available online and in bookstores. For more behind the scenes, search Viewpoints Radio on Twitter and Facebook. This segment was written and produced by Amira Zaveri. I'm Gary Price.
Oregon's Tillamook County Creamery Association produces dairy products you know and love. In fact, the farmer-owned co-op makes award-winning cheese and is now the fastest-growing family-size ice cream brand in the country. Its commitment to stewardship informs every decision the co-op makes, and it's getting noticed. The company was recognized by Fast Company as a World Changing Ideas Award Honorable Mention recipient. And in 2020, Tillamook achieved status as a certified B Corporation. There are plenty more good stewardship examples in their newly released Good is Something We Make Together stewardship report. Here's Paul Snyder, Executive Vice President of Stewardship at Tillamook County Creamery Association.
When COVID hit, our farmer owners stepped up with a $4 million relief fund to help support employees, nonprofits, and local businesses in the communities where we operate. And we donated 10% of September profits to the Alpha Farmer Initiative to protect at-risk farmland and provide grants to up-and-coming farmers all over the country. We've also reduced water use, made advances in cow care, and joined the global fight against food waste.
The Tillamook County Creamery Association is owned by around 80 Oregon farming families and has been around for 112 years. Find out how they're a force for good in the world at tillamook.com/stewardship.
Cardiovascular or CV disease is the number one killer of adults in the U.S., and millions of people trying to reduce their risk of a heart attack or stroke may unknowingly be taking medications that are not proven nor FDA approved to reduce cardiovascular risk. Let's hear from cardiologist Dr. John Osborne.
Many people are unaware that after a failed outcome study, the FDA revoked the approval of fenofibrates when added to statins, as the risk outweighed the benefits to heart health. It's important to remember that statins, along with diet and exercise, can lower cardiovascular risk by about 25 to 35%. But persistent cardiovascular risk, which can lead to a life-threatening event, may remain. I would tell anyone still being prescribed fenofibrates, such as Tricor and Trilipix, with a statin, to talk to their doctor about FDA-approved therapies for cardiovascular risk reduction.
To learn more and get clear on the facts, visit itscleartomenow.com. Again, that's itscleartomenow.com.
And that's Viewpoints for this week. Viewpoints is a production of MediaTracks Communications. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more about upcoming shows. And find a library of past programs on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and more information about our guests at viewpointsradio.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Viewpoints.
Coming up on Viewpoints.
The average consumer has got Angry Birds and Twitter and the news at the end of their fingertips on their phone. You've got to really present something that's worth taking them away from Candy Crush.
The modern craft of book editing. Then,
I don't have a boss. I don't have somebody standing over me saying, you know, you've got to do this first, this, prioritize this, do this. But the boss, you know how I think of it, is the music.
The balance of being a musical artist as well as your own boss. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
Ignite your passion for discovery at the COSI Science Festival May 1st through the 4th. Experience 3 days packed with interactive community events featuring exhibits, live demos, and engaging conversations with experts in science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And on Saturday, May 4th, join us for the free Big Science Celebration featuring over 100 exhibitors, all with interactive activities to share. And of course, there will be larger-than-life science demonstrations, live music, and more from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. just outside of COSI. Visit cosiscifest.org to learn more.